From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. And on this day, party leaders in Maine scrambling to fill vacancies as candidates drop out of legislative races. School closures and questions facing rural communities about their identities. That's ahead in a moment.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the law firm Cooley LLP. With offices in the U.S., Europe, and China, Cooley advises entrepreneurs, investors, financial institutions, and established companies around the world, where innovation meets the law. From the Wallace Foundation, fostering improvements in learning and enrichment for disadvantaged children, and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas at wallacefoundation.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Leaders of both major political parties are scrambling to fill candidate vacancies across the state as 33 party nominees have withdrawn from legislative races. Most are Republicans, and political reporter Mal Leary joins us now from the Capitol to explain what this all means. Mal, are the Republicans in trouble with these candidates dropping out?
Well, Ed, they might be. But first, I think it's important to point out that this happens every election. We call them the shadow or the stalking horse candidates. Somebody agrees to put their name on the ballot for party leaders to make sure the party has someone on the ballot in the fall, knowing the leaders are still out there trying to recruit what may be a better candidate for that particular race. So some of these dropouts are expected. But what may prove to be a problem to the Republicans more than the Democrats is the Republicans have a lot more people dropping out than the Democrats. 9 Republican state Senate candidates have withdrawn. No Senate Democrats have. 14 House Republican candidates have dropped out to 9 Democrats. And 3 of those House Republicans, Ed, are incumbent members.
So given that old saying that all politics is local, is the impact as bad as it looks for the Republicans?
Well, that's a good point. And in Maine, more so than many other states, a good Republican candidate can win in a Democratic district, and a good Democratic candidate can win in a Republican district. And many of those Senate Republican candidates that have dropped out are in districts that lean heavily Democratic, like Portland. And traditionally, Republicans have had a hard time getting candidates to run in those districts anyway. What has to be more concerning to Republicans is when 3 incumbents have withdrawn from House races and only 1 Democrat incumbent has dropped out. Incumbents usually have an advantage in House races. You've got to remember, a House district only has about 9,000 potential voters. So incumbency has always been a real factor in those very local races.
What are some of the other factors that are affecting these candidate withdrawals?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty over public financing through the Clean Elections Act. A notice has gone out from the Ethics Commission that none of these replacement candidates should expect to be able to qualify because the program does not have the ability to make payments. That's an issue we've been hearing about now for weeks in the legislature. There's a drafting error in the budget that was passed last year that left the Ethics Commission unable to actually spend the money that they have in the Clean Elections Fund in this new budget year. If that's ever fixed by the legislature, which is still technically in session, by the way, even though they're not meeting at the Statehouse, then the commission will be able to allow those replacement candidates to qualify and get funding for the fall. But that is a really big if. And if you're there trying to consider whether to step in and run in one of these races, that's going to weigh heavily on you.
So does that inability of the Ethics Commission to provide funds hurt one party more than another?
In the Senate, both parties have most of their candidates using clean elections public financing. But in the House, far more Republicans are running traditional. Traditional meaning they're raising the money the old-fashioned way from individual contributors than the Democrats.
So when will we finally see who's running in these various districts?
The parties have until July 23rd to hold caucuses in each of the House and Senate districts. Those caucuses are made up of the committees involved on both parties. They get together and they nominate new cabinet candidates. I suspect we'll see some seats may go uncontested, giving a few candidates a free ride to the State House.
Maine public political reporter Mal Leary at the Capitol in Augusta, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Ed.
As Maine's population has grown older, the number of school-aged children has declined, forcing some communities to close schools that have been social anchors for years. Robbie Feinberg brings us the story of one recent school closure and how it reflects the challenges faced by Maine's rural communities.
It was a bittersweet day last month at the Pittston Consolidated School, south of Gardner. The elementary students here were joined by about 40 kids from nearby Teresa C. Hamlin Elementary in Randolph, only a few miles away. They had come to take part in a carnival event, competing in relay races and squirting water guns. It's the first time that students from Hamlin and Pittston have come together like this, but it won't be the last. In March, the local school board voted to close Hamlin and send students to Pittston next fall. As the day begins, some of the Hamlin students are shy. One fifth grader balks as he's asked to jump in a bounce house with some new acquaintances.
Jared, come in. Come in. I'll stick right by you.
It's okay.
But the hope is that this event will gradually help these students adjust as they transition to their new school next fall. The decision to close TC Hamlin was a long time coming. District enrollment has steadily declined for nearly a decade. The tipping point came last fall. Superintendent Pat Hopkins says that's when a lack of teachers forced Hamlin to send a class of students to nearby schools.
Ultimately, that left us with 40 students at the TC Hamlin School, and we just couldn't sustain that.
She says a school nurse only visited Hamlin for a half day every week. And teacher leader Sarah Hess says one teacher was forced to cover third, fourth, and fifth grades all at once.
Just having more staff, having more resources around, having more peers to interact with, to be able to branch out is going to be extremely beneficial to them.
But some residents resisted the decision. Like a lot of rural schools, Hamlin is the center of its community. Without an elementary school, they wondered, would people want to move to town? And would they stay? Randolph resident Pete Coughlin spoke at a school board meeting earlier this year.
We lose our town playground and the outdoor basketball court. We lose this gym for sports, lots of them, and other activities, family gatherings, and meetings.
Local officials have tried to assure residents that for now, the school building isn't going anywhere and will still be a service center. Yet similar worries have prompted some towns to withdraw from regional school boards and form their own districts, in effect putting control of local schools back into their own hands. But in many cases, communities have had to face financial and demographic realities. According to the Maine Department of Education, 91 public schools have closed in the state over the past 10 years.
And we have to have as many resources as possible. We just can't hold on to traditions and hold on to what things were, you know, 20, 40, 60 years ago.
Ben Saroy is the superintendent of School Administrative District 27. It's in the very north of Maine, serving students from Fort Kent to the Allegash. The district has closed three elementary schools in as many years after enrollment fell to a few dozen students per school. The hour-long bus rides have been hard, particularly for preschoolers. But he believes consolidation has been largely positive for the region, that it's led to more socialization and educational opportunities. The district is even in the running to construct a new regional high school that would serve students from the entire St. John Valley.
We really have to rethink the way that we're preparing these kids for their future and how that's going to impact our region. I think that's important.
TC Hamlin Elementary School teacher leader Sarah Hess says she understands the benefits, but says it's tough for students to say goodbye to their neighborhood school.
They are looking forward to new friends. They are looking, everybody wants to go play on the playground because we have a very small playground. But at the same time, they are going to miss their teachers. They're going to miss the building.
but Hess sees signs that make her optimistic about the transition. As a few young girls get in line for the water gun station, a student from Pittston calls them over and introduces them to her friend.
Your other sister is on my team, and you are on Lexi's.
The possibility of even more school closings leave many rural towns facing questions of their identity over the next 10, 20, or 50 years. But on this day, the staff at TC Hamlin are feeling confident that come next fall, their students will be okay. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. Thanks to Willis Ryder Arnold, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.